Courtney Love from the band Hole. Love that album, love that song. But I remember at one point she was one of those celebrities who came out and said that she accredited the Church of Scientology for healing her of her addiction to drugs. And that was one of the few times that the Church of Scientology publicly issued some sort of statement that said, "I don't think so." It was like one of the rare times when they had a celebrity who was trying to say, "Yeah, I think I'm a Scientologist," and they're like, "No, not her," which is probably wise because I think her drug problems were just starting. But anyway, this is what it's like with the Church of Scientology as an organization, tax exempt. They enjoy the benefits of reaping enormous amounts of money, paying people very few dollars to work, like Mark Headley, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology. It's a great re it's a really good book, but we're getting a lot of updates on what life has been like for him since he was featured in the documentary known as Going Clear on HBO, and then later on with Leah Remini's TV series as well, as life continues to be complicated for somebody who's walked away from the Church of Scientology. Next, on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Mark Headley, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology, continuing a conversation that's been long overdue, and yet one that he and I continued off the air off and on over the years. And I've been super proud of you. I think it's really cool how you've played a part in this, but obviously it's not like all that you do. You've had a successful career. Once you left the church, the skills that you had, as you already mentioned, immediately turned into a profitable career, and you have a family, and you were able to get your wife out. And I want to let's start there, just as we're going to go back and clean up some things that we started and then stopped, because that was pretty dicey. Your wife almost didn't make it. You got out with the help of a local sheriff's deputy, but your wife was a different story because she was on a bus and they were starting to hone in on where she was as she was coming to you from across the country.
Yeah, she didn't. She had a phone that she used there at the property, which was like a Nextel radio. And when we basically she got we contacted through her sister, and her sister didn't know that I had escaped and thought I was out working somewhere on a project. And basically they changed Claire's phone as soon as I escaped. They gave her a new phone. And she was able to get her new phone number to me through her sister. And I called her, and we basically orchestrated her escape. And one of the provisos of that was that she not turn that phone on once she escaped. And she got to the bus station and didn't know, we didn't know, we lived in a bubble for 15 years. She didn't know what a calling card was. And that was the only way you could make a call. None of the phones at the bus station took coins. And so she couldn't make a call. So she turned on that phone. And as soon as she turned on that phone, they found her. They used the GPS data from the phone. They tracked her. They knew that she was at the bus station. They figured out that she had called me. They found out where I was. And they put the pieces together. And they essentially intercepted her in Las Vegas on her way from California to Kansas City. And she basically sat in the middle of the Greyhound bus station on her purse in the middle of the room and told them there was at least two or three people there. I think it was two or three people that came to get her, to bring her back. And she told them if they touched her, she was going to scream. And meanwhile, they called me on the phone and told me that they had gotten her and they were taking her back to the property. And they told her that they had talked to me and that I was on my way back to the property. So we both thought that it was over from either end. Even though I'm in Kansas City and she's in the middle of the floor of the bus station, and if she would have believed them and gone back, then I probably never would have seen her ever again.
Yeah.
But she decided to just stick to her guns and leave. And she got on the bus, and then she called me, turned her phone back on. Who cares now? The gig is up. They know exactly where she is. She did eventually end up getting back on the bus. They didn't touch her. And she called me, and she said, okay, I got back on the bus. And I was that, but there was about a half an hour there where I was in the, it was snowing in Kansas City. I was out in the snow pacing up and down the street, losing my mind, going, oh my God, we were so close. We are so close to getting her out. And then when she called me, oh my gosh, that was the best call of my life. And yeah, we just celebrated this last year. We just celebrated 27 years of marriage. And we've got three beautiful boys. We have a, you know, beautiful home in Colorado. We both have very successful businesses. And we've, despite of everything that they've tried to put in our way, and all of the harassment and the spying and the everything, we've still managed to flourish and prosper. And that is really the message that I wanted to get to all these other people that were either thinking of getting out or you know, or if you're at the end base right now and you're listening to this, the outside world is a beautiful place. They really paint this picture that everyone outside of Scientology are criminals and drug addicts and
right.
prostitutes and, you know, just thieves. And they paint this picture of the world that everyone's out to kill each other. And I don't think in the 15 years since I escaped, I don't think I've met one person that treated me as horribly as almost everybody there treats you.
Yeah.
So it's just not that way. It's a, and also the people that leave that place and escape from, at least from the worker end of it, they have a very good work ethic. So you could succeed in just about any line of business just because you're willing to put in, you know, 10
right.
hours a day.
Right.
And I'm,
that's a break from 16.
I'm phoning it in at 10 hours a day.
Right. You don't even try.
What am Slacker. I going to do all weekend? Am I going to take the weekend off too? Oh my goodness.
But there's some pretty famous people that have become the focus of much investigation. One of those was David Miscavige's wife, as our last report, I heard that at least she has made some public statements that I'm fine and I'm happy where I am and I don't want to leave.
Well, yeah, through Scientology's lawyers.
Right.
So, I mean, when I left in 2005, she was having meetings with us saying that she was worried about David Miscavige because he wasn't sleeping and all these violent outbursts. And she was basically confiding in us that she was worried. Like, this is not good. We're in a bad situation. I mean, we're on the beat down end of this. So we're like, yeah, newsflash, honey, it's not been so great for the past 10 years.
Right.
But I heard stories from people that left after me that that she was whisked away, and she was basically from all accounts she's at a place in Running Springs near Big Bear, and that's one of their properties that's called the Church of Spiritual Technology. That's where they dig these giant holes into the side of the mountain, and they have all these archival all of L. Ron Hubbard's lectures and all this, the writings are on gold discs and nickel-plated books. And basically, there's only maybe 10 or 15 staff that work there. And that place was even confidential to people that worked at the international headquarters. Not a lot of people knew the location of that place that worked at the headquarters. That's how secret that place is. That's where they probably got her.
Is that because they have that facility so that it would survive whatever alien apocalypse is coming?
Yeah, basically, the idea, they have like solar record players that'll play these L. Ron Hubbard discs and all that other stuff. And the thing that Hubbard laid out is basically if there's a nuclear apocalypse, this will withstand that. And all of these materials are vacuum sealed, hermetically sealed in titanium capsules and all this. And I'll tell you, when the zombie apocalypse does hit, we need to get like a club of people to go to one of these places, because we're talking about rare metal central. We got gold,
right,
titanium, you know, all this good stuff. We could melt it down. We could start a whole new economy.
Right.
And I know all the locations of all of them now. But it's a good. It's going to be fortified as well. That's the idea that you'll be able.
That's the idea.
Somehow you'll find one of these places. I mean, then the Scientology technology can be the way of the new world.
And this is based on L. Ron Hubbard's predictions, his sci-fi writing and other things. But how much of this has to do with Miscavige himself, in your experience, where he either differs from or has, to put it nicely, built upon whatever it was that he inherited from L. Ron Hubbard?
I think Miscavige plays both sides of it. So Hubbard was a genius, but he was also nuts, like just
right.
crazy out of all, just crazy as could be. And so if you believe in Scientology, then Hubbard is the source of the technology. And in that regard, I think Miscavige plays it like, yes, we've got to keep the technology pure, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, he's doing whatever he wants. But I mean, Hubbard was emphatic that there should never, ever be fundraising. You make money in Scientology from delivering Scientology counseling and Scientology courses. That's it. And David Miscavige, over the past 20 years, has completely flipped that around, where they've never really figured out how to make money off of training and processing and have the whole machine work. And when I left in 2005, they had collected $1 billion for training and counseling that they had not delivered. So that if every single Scientology person that had ever paid for anything came in and said, I'm just going to do the stuff I paid for, I'm not going to give you any new money, Scientology would be bankrupt within a few years. So David Miscavige switched over to entirely doing fundraising. So that's how they're up to $3 billion.
And that's from celebrity tithing?
Yeah, when we spoke in 2011, they had $1 billion. In the last decade, they've got another $2 billion in just cash and assets that they've got.
Mm.
And that's because they're going and hitting up these guys that are $100 million from one guy, $10 million from one guy. Nancy Cartwright's giving them like $15, $20 million. You know, the girl who does the Bart Simpson voice for The Simpsons.
Yeah, yeah, sure. No, I like her a lot. And I heard that was a big focus of hers.
Yeah, so they're getting, but these people are getting a statue or like a little trophy. So whereas before, where Hubbard was spending years and years and years and years of working with somebody and doing all these counseling things and all these courses and all this Scientology auditing, which in the end is just a giant bait and switch all along the way, but they're doing all that for $500K, you know,
right.
$1 million. David Miscavige is getting $1 million in an hour from one guy, and that's it. We're good. So that's what their main focus is now. They're building their real estate portfolio, and they're just sucking these billionaires dry. And they call them whales in Scientology.
Sure.
The people that get the money, if they have a whale, that's a big, big money guy that's going to give them millions and millions of dollars.
They use the same term in Vegas for
exactly.
Mark.
Yeah, yeah. Right. That's probably, you know, I don't know. Vegas might have got it from Scientology. Scientology might have got it from Vegas. I don't know. But
go either way.
They call them whales, and there's a guy named Bob Duggan, and he has some pharmaceutical company, which is kind of ironic, seeing Scientology attacks pharmaceutical companies. He is the single largest donor to Scientology, and he made all his money through pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, so, I don't know who he is. I'm curious, because that's another thing that comes up, is some people that you really do hear like these really big names, and you go, wow, that's didn't know that person was in Scientology, or that they credit anyway, Scientology. But I heard stories recently, at least in the scandal sheets, that were saying that Tom Cruise had been thinking about leaving the Church of Scientology.
Well, this is a crazy thing, and I'll tell you this. This happens every single time he has a new movie come out. People don't want to go see a movie that has Tom Cruise in it if they think that money is going to go to him and then he's going to give it to Scientology. So what happens is the tabloids, the studios, or Tom's people or whoever is in bed with the tabloids, and they leak these stories about how he's escaping, he's going to meet up with Suri, and they run these right before a new movie comes out. So Top Gun's coming, Top Gun 2020 or whatever they're going to call it.
Yeah.
And so you're going to start to see these stories.
I just saw it last week. I just saw it. Yeah. That's what caught my attention.
Pop up all the way up until the opening of the movie. He's leaving. He's leaving. He's leaving. He's leaving. They're going to make a ton of money on the movie, and then you're going to see him at the Scientology Center a week later, and they're going to be like, ah, he didn't leave. They do it. They've been doing it for 10 years, and they're going to keep doing it because they know people don't want to give their money if it's going to go to Scientology. But if they think he left, then they'll go see the movie.
So you're after you and your wife were out, and you know they sent you bills and said you owe us $150,000 for training and whatever, which you totally blew off, and nothing ever came of that. What are some of what are the other financial things have they tried to do with you, or are you at this point you're just like you're a total lost cause and they're just whatever.
I am a lost cause, but along the way they've tried to cash in a few different times. When we in 2009 we filed a lawsuit against them. And which we eventually lost. And in the final judgment, it basically said, yeah, all the stuff you said happened, did happen, it looks like. But the cause of action, we should have said it was physical abuse and, different causes of action. Basically, because the FBI were investigating the case, the lawyers put all of their eggs in the human trafficking basket, and they canceled all the other causes of action. If we would have left those other causes of action, we probably would have fared differently. Because we lost, Scientology told us, you owe us $45,000 in legal fees, depositions, paper filings, sure, all these other things. And they basically said, if you don't pay us the $45,000, we're going to aggressively come after you, and we're going to collect that money from you, which basically meant they're going to just ruin me.
Right.
But they said, but if we do give them the rights to my book, if we agree to spy for them and give them, rat out other people that we know are leaving or not left yet or we know are going to get out soon, or basically give them all the intel that we could give them, and never, ever speak ill of Scientology or David Miscavige ever again, they would forgive the $45,000 debt, and they'd basically just call it even.
Buy it cheap.
So if we spied for, and I told him, here's a check for $45,000. Forget you. I'm never going to stop. And a good friend of mine, Jason Begay, said, there's no way you should pay that $45,000. I'm like, Jason, I already did it. I sold my kid's swing set. I sold my van. I scraped up every little last penny I had. I wrote him a check. He said, well, you should do a fundraiser. And we had a fundraiser on GoFundMe. We listed it on this. There's a Scientology, a guy who's been reporting on Scientology for decades named Tony Ortega. We posted that fundraiser on his website. Within a week, we had $50,000 people donated to pay
that
bill.
That's sweet. That's nice.
Rot hole again. But Scientology, every chance they get, they say, oh, we lost the case, and,
right,
and they had to pay us, and it's just like, okay, whatever. The next, there was another case that was with ours.
Well, hang on. We'll get to that, because we're hearing music in the background, so that means hang on for that story. Everybody else, too. Top of the hour, we'll give the numbers, but not yet. Talking with Mark Headley, blown for good behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology 10 years later. An update on what things have been like since all the TV specials and HBO docs and all of that. Next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. Yeah, I think that's the theme of this book, Blown for Good. And it occurred to me, I don't think it's ever been made into a movie, which kind of surprises me. It's a great story. It's got these really dramatic twists in it too. And of course, there's all the celebrity stuff. We'll get back to that in just a moment. And if you're online, by the way, at coasttocoastam.com, I put up a story. I mentioned it earlier, but it's under the in the news section. My oldest son invented a word, which, it's not like a birth of a supernova or something, but it's funny how it's getting traction. He works in the sustainability space, and he's working with companies to recover assets and to upcycle and to create these closed loop business systems. So every time they buy something new, they know what the end use is, et cetera. So it's kind of cutting edge and very alternative, and focused both on making money but also keeping products out of the landfills as much as possible. And so he invented a word, so we put up the news story on that in the news section. You go read that. You have to scroll down to get to his part because he's not that important, but we love him. But about 15 graphs down, you'll get into it. You'll see it there. And more with Mark Headley next before we get to your calls at the top of the hour on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Bunnett. Mark, remember where you were when we came to the bottom of the hour, but real quickly, how come they never made a movie about your book?
I've actually been contacted by several different people who some have asked me the same question, and a few have even like tried to do something with it. There's a girl in Hollywood that I knew that actually was an actress they worked with at the headquarters, and she eventually got out. And her and one of her production partners, they actually made like a little short story of it, like a little
Like a
short
little
movie.
test movie, like a little movie short. But it
And
never went
it was
further
really
than that.
good. It was really good. It was just like, it wasn't that long, maybe like 5 or 10 minutes, but it was amazing. And yeah, I'm getting up there, so I don't know who's going to play me for a lot of time. I think that Matt Damon should play me. Now he's getting up there, so I don't know what we're going to do.
Tom Cruise, how about could play
Oh,
you?
right. Yeah.
So anyway, you were saying though at the bottom of the hour about somebody else that was that at the same time
The lawyers that were representing us were also representing another client, and they didn't take out those causes of action that they took out in ours. They were like, "We'll do it in yours, but we'll leave them in this other one." She did end up settling about a week before they went to trial. So
She got something out of it.
they basically the lawyers have figured out how to get these things taken care of now. And it's kind of like where we had on the public facing front, we had to get some books out there, and we had a lot of people to start just telling their experiences and telling their stories. And now in the legal arena, the lawyers are basically figuring out how to navigate Scientology's mastery of the legal system, and how they basically the loopholes that they jump through. And this has been the case with a lot of their front groups. So they have a drug rehab front group called Narcanon.
Yeah, I was going to ask you
Narcanon
about
has
that.
been sued, and lawyers winning lawsuits and settlements and all sorts of things against Narcanons now. There's a case right now going on in Los Angeles with another one of Scientology's front groups called the World Literacy Crusade, where they have been scamming Medi-Cal in California, and that's going to trial in Los Angeles, and they've been having all sorts of hearings, and that just happened to have some really prominent members of the Nation of Islam, which have partnered up with Scientology. Talk about the most wacko coupling of space cults, but these two guys have joined forces, and then that case is going forward. And then you've got these criminal cases like the Danny Masterson case, that is basically the DA in Los Angeles has got a file, and there's been an investigation going on for years and years and years into sexual abuse allegations. So that more and more the people telling their stories, and people are getting the information out there, and law enforcement and the legal areas are starting to catch up to figure out how they can put the pieces together so that Scientology just can't just because basically for 50 years they were just getting away with murder until the internet came along. And as soon as the internet came along, it was sort of like they couldn't hide anywhere.
Yeah, it was working to their advantage to have all of this information kind of compartmentalized.
Exactly. Nobody knew about all the other people that had escaped, and nobody knew their stories. And as soon as people start sharing stories and saying, oh, that happened to me, oh, that happened to me, they go on like, oh, I'm not the crazy one. They're the crazy ones.
Right.
So, and that really, that's really meant a lot. And just the more people that are willing to have people like me come on a radio show and talk about it, that was a foreign concept back in the mid-2000s. And so, yeah, even having that, and even like South Park. Well, South Park did this cartoon. When I got my dossier, because right around 2005, 2006 is when I was sort of causing trouble posting stuff about Scientology on the internet, and that's when they were collecting my garbage and all this other stuff. Well, in one of my dossiers, it also covers South Park. So they had people trying to figure out how to collect the South Park guys' garbage, and they had people trying to get jobs at the catering company that brought food into the South Park production offices. Hmm. Like that, this is a year after the episode aired. It's like, what's the purpose? They let the cat out of the bag, you know, but they wanted to get dirt on those guys.
It was revenge, you know, and right, and then a shot over the bow to anybody else who's going to think about it.
Exactly. But yeah,
and they lost Isaac Hayes in the deal. And I mean, he was that great character chef and he was gone. I'm assuming he still remains a dedicated Scientologist.
No, he passed away shortly after that whole nonsense.
Oh, I didn't know
down.
That. I don't know why. I hadn't thought about that. That's funny.
He was on a treadmill and he had a heart attack.
Oh gosh.
Shot with him when I was at the property. We did a film with him. And he was the best guy. And he really, at the end of the day, he really hadn't done that much in Scientology. I think they helped him out with some stuff, and he met a lot of people through that. And I don't know the whole story, but he was a good guy. Isaac Hayes was a really good guy.
So how about your family? What's the status there?
My father actually passed away just about 2 weeks ago.
I'm so sorry.
And he was the one who took us in when my wife and I escaped. So he was actually the one that he had a choice to make. He could either help me and never talk to his daughter again, or he could turn me away and he'd still be able to talk to my sister. And he chose to take me in and then a few weeks later take my wife Claire in. And we stayed with him for a total of about 3 weeks. And then by that time I had a job and my wife had a job and we got a place and we moved out. For that 3 weeks that he put us up with, they basically said you could never talk to my sister. He could never talk to my sister ever again. And he hadn't talked to her. This was in 2005, in January of 2005. 4 hours before he passed away, my sister called and talked to him for a half an hour.
Mm. That's
because
nice.
She could have called any time in 15 years,
but
she waited till the last day, right before he went to sleep for the last time to finally talk to him. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's really the damage that these guys are causing. They're destroying families.
They know they are.
Destroying people's lives for over nonsense.
Right. Nonsense. How about your wife's family?
My wife... she has two sisters and a brother, and her parents, they're all still in Scientology. We have not spoken to them pretty much at all. She's had contact with her mom and her stepdad at a funeral. I think she saw them for a few hours. And I similarly have seen my mom twice in the last 15 years at her brother's funeral and my grandmother's funeral. And I've never seen my sister or spoken to my sister since the day I left. I've not spoken to her once, or my half brother, or any other, basically people that are still involved with Scientology. That my mother told her family, who are not in Scientology, they said, why don't you talk to your son and see your grandchildren? And she told my her family that aren't in Scientology, that are not involved in any way, if I speak to Mark or his wife Claire, I will risk all mankind's eternity.
Right. That's the
she
threat.
Told them that.
Yeah. That's the threat all the time. That's what they told you about. That's what they were telling your wife to keep her from getting back on the bus and coming to see
that's
you.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They said, you're risking all of mankind's future eternity. Huh. And that is the thing they tell these people. And I'm kind of like, you guys, they have this big thing. They call it clearing the planet. When you get a person who is in Scientology for many years, they become what's called a clear. They rid themselves of their reactive mind. And Scientology's ultimate goal is for everyone to be clear, everyone in the world to be a Scientologist and become clear. They can't even clear a zip code. How are they going to clear a city?
They were trying with Clearwater, right? That's one of the things you and I DM'd about at one point about Clearwater, Florida, wasn't it?
It's a huge deal right now in Clearwater because they bought up about $100 million worth of properties down in downtown Clearwater.
Right.
And they're basically taking over the entire city. And the city's in a stranglehold. They have no way to counter this. There's no way to do it. And even there, they maybe have 5,000 Scientologists.
Right.
5,000. It's the silliest thing in the world. They can't even clear Clearwater. How are they going to clear the planet?
Clear is in its name. It should already start clear.
I'd love to run a math seminar for Scientologists and be like, if you're going to, and I've done the math. When people used to come, sometimes Scientologists would contact me and they'd go, well, tell me how you don't think this is going to work. And I say, listen, if you guys want to clear Los Angeles, it's going to take you 10,000 years. Okay?
Right.
Go and see a movie, go see your kids. Stop messing around with this nonsense.
Stop this.
Come on. 10,000 years just to clear L.A., just to clear Burbank. Burbank only has 500,000 people in it. But every time you die, you have to start over again. So it's like you're never going to do it. It's a never-ending. It's just silliness.
I started the show tonight by mentioning that there's a new volcano in the Philippines, and it's spewing ash up into the air. And there was, of course, several important volcanoes in Hawaii the last couple of years, and that caused a lot of damage and even some death. So how do Scientologists look at volcanoes when the eruptions? Is that considered a sign of anything?
This is the crazy thing, is that the volcanoes have to do with Lord Xenu. He's a galactic overlord from 75 million years ago. He came to Earth. And he dumped, they had all these overpopulations in the other planets, and he brought all these souls, he froze them, and he dropped them in volcanoes. And that is supposedly how we're all affected and how we do things we don't want to do. It's these things called body thetans, which are controlling us. Now, 90% of Scientologists don't know anything about this, because you find out about this after years and years and years in Scientology, when you get to operating Satan level 3, which I'd say at least 90% of Scientologists have never gotten that far. And even when you do get that far, you're not allowed to ever speak of that to any other Scientologist. So we can't just, if you're OT3 and I'm OT3 and we're just sitting around the water cooler, we can't talk about Xenu. We would be declared a suppressive if we ever even talk about Xenu. So they don't talk about the volcanoes.
They don't
talk about Xenu. And most of them, when you tell them about the Xenu thing, most Scientologists will look at you like you're crazy. Like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. What are you talking about? And even when I was at the base, I had a vendor who once was supplying us with computer equipment and everything. He said, is it true you guys believe in Xenu and aliens? And I was like, what the hell are you talking about? I had no idea. To be fair, I have never even read Dianetics to this day.
Right.
So I wasn't that knowledgeable anyway, but I had no idea what he was talking about. So I don't know. I mean, even the fact where he dumped him in the volcanoes, when the volcanoes exploded, that's how the body thetans got out. So I don't think there's any leftover body thetans in the volcanoes.
Okay, that's what I wondered.
It really makes a big difference.
That's right, and your explanation is perfect. But that's—I've always wondered that, like, if they were sitting around going, "Oh no, 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 that's proof of there's Xenu at it, going at it again, or something like that." But it's
right.
not. It's just a total disconnect.
Well, the other crazy thing is that in almost all of the religions, whatever that origin story is, they
right?
spend millions and millions of dollars to track down the cloth or the robe or the
sure.
cross or these
right
well,
relics.
The Scientology hasn't spent a penny looking for Xenu. I myself am part of SETI, and I just looked on there the other day. I've got a certificate from SETI that I've contributed 4,375,646 cobblestones of computation data looking for Xenu. I'm on an actual team of SETI called Team Xenu. And it's 3.78 quintillion floating point computing operations. But anyway, I think I've spent more time looking for him than they have.
And that was the character that John Travolta played in the movie, right? Isn't that what he was? That was the...
No, well, see, that's another thing, is that Battlefield Earth was written to basically kind of get that kind of story into main population.
Right.
And that really just has to do with the psychiatrists. Lord Xenu used psychiatrists to control populations through taxes and implanting of images and stories. And so the cyclos in the Battlefield Earth movie are supposed to be psychiatrists.
Oh, really?
And
okay.
And yes. And the Xenu story is another book that Hubbard wrote, and I think it's called Revolt in the Stars. And it's basically the whole Xenu story as a fiction thing. And it was a very guarded manuscript at the international base.
Interesting.
And a few people were allowed to read it, but if only if you'd been up to OT3. And
that was called Operation.
And then even my wife was up to OT5. I never did anything. I mean, the only auditing I got was from Tom Cruise, which I talk about in the book. But
Right. But it was operational.
I watched the South Park episode. I was looking at my wife like, is this the real thing? And she's sitting there watching it going, yeah, that's basically super, super accurate. And even then, I mean, I'd only been out for a few months when that South Park episode came on. They tell you if you learn about Xenu before you're ready to learn about Xenu, like if you are told these upper-level materials before you're ready,
right.
you'll get pneumonia and you'll die.
Okay.
And I couldn't sleep after that South Park episode. I thought I was gonna die in my sleep. And that actually, I think, was one of the things that sort of deprogrammed me faster than anything was I woke up the next morning, I didn't even have a sniffle. Much less pneumonia.
Right.
And I thought, no, it's all nonsense.
Must not be true. Well, the name, it was, did I get it? Operational Thetan 3? Is that what you said?
Yes. It's called OT3 or Operating Thetan Level 3.
Okay, there you go.
That's where you find out about Xenu.
Okay.
That's where you find out about the body Thetans, which. Any one person could have tens of thousands and thousands of these body Thetans. And when you get to a level called OT7, you actually audit each one of these things out.
Wow.
OT7 could take you years and years and years and years and years. And through the use of this e-meter that they sell you, which is basically
right.
It's like a lie detector.
I've seen them on eBay. We'll get back to that. You can buy them on eBay now, too, obviously. All right. Well, perfect. Operating Theta Level 3. That sounds like something out of, it's not even Star Trek. It's like something out of an Ed Wood movie. You know what I mean? All right, so coming up, we'll give you the numbers. You join the conversation. We'll get you on with Mark Headley on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.